Pine Hollow nodded. Zastro's apparent immunity to the gloom, doom, and despair which had sent most of the Emeraldian Navy's surviving senior officers' morale plunging was remarkable. The Commodore had to be aware of the near hopelessness of Emerald's position, but instead of dwelling upon it, he was actively seeking ways to strike back at Karis. As he had just finished pointing out, the Royal Carisian Navy lacked sufficient ships to blockade every Emeraldian port, and Zastro was busy fitting out light, jury-rigged cruisers as commerce raiders in every harbor with a boatyard. Most of them would be little more than lightly armed, outsized rowing skiffs or hastily converted and even more lightly armed merchantmen. Neither type could hope to stand up to any sort of regular man of war, even one without the devilish new Carisian artillery. But they could capture and destroy lumbering, lightly armed, or completely unarmed merchantmen, and commerce raiding was probably the one way in which Emerald could hope to actually hurt, or inconvenience at least, Karis. Not that it was going to do any good in the end, of course. Narman continued to gaze out the window for two or three more minutes without speaking. Pine Hollow knew the prince's eyes were following the grayish-tan pyramids of the Carisian galleon's weathered sails as they glided slowly, slowly across Erastor Bay.
"You know," Narman said finally, "the more I think about how we got into this mess, the more pissed off I get."
He turned away from the Carisian warships and looked his cousin in the eye.
"It was stupid," he said,
and that, Pine Hollow knew, was the deepest, most damning condemnation in Narman's vocabulary.
"Even if Harald hadn't been building all those damned galleons, with all those damned new guns of his, it would still have been stupid. It's obvious Trenaire and Clinton never even tried to find out what was actually happening in Karis, because they didn't really care. They had their own agenda and their own objectives, and so they simply said the hell with thinking things through and started moving their chess pieces around like blind, fumbling idiots. Even if things had worked out the way they'd expected, it would have been using a sledgehammer to crack an egg. And the way it did work out, they only pushed Harald into smashing everyone who could have hurt him."
"Oh," he made an impatient gesture, "we didn't know what he was up to either before he handed us all our heads, I'll admit that. But we at least knew he was up to something, which was more than that idiot Hector seemed aware of. And who did Trenaire and Clinton decide to back? Hector, that's who."
Pine Hollow nodded, and Narman's lips worked as if he wanted to spit on the floor. Then the prince drew a deep breath.
"But there's another reason it was stupid too, Travis," he said in a much softer voice, as if he were afraid someone else might hear him. "It was stupid because it shows all the world exactly what the group of four's precious members really think."
His eyes had gone very still, dark, and cold, and Pine Hollow's stomach muscles tightened.
"What they think, my prince?" he asked very carefully. "They think they can destroy anyone they want to," Narman told him. "They whistled up, what was it Earl Thirsk and Caleb called us? Ah, yes, they whistled up a pack of hired stranglers, murderers, and rapists, and ordered us to cut Karis's throat. They couldn't have cared less what that meant for us, as well as for Karis. They decided to burn an entire kingdom to the ground and kill thousands of people, and to use me to do it, Shan Wei take their souls, as if the decision were no more important than choosing what bottle of wine to order with supper, or whether to have the fish or the fowl for the main course. That's how important the decision was for them."
He'd been wrong, Pine Hollow thought. Narman's eyes weren't cold. It was simply that the lava in them burned so deep, so hot, that it was almost invisible.